standard as well. And the EIS document covers both the temperature tower and the fish collector, but the big push right now is the whole concern with possible reservoir drawdowns and or now building in the wet. What are we gonna end up with the recommended plan forward?
Okay, thanks.
I believe some of this.
Yeah, any questions for Jeff on Detroit or for Kelly on the Detroit EIS? All right, we'll take a pause. Aaron just arrived. Aaron, we were just doing some preliminary updates and Ida was taking some notes. That's all right. And we already have the list of names.
Great.
So.
We might have a new person on the phone.
Yeah.
Who just joined us on the phone?
This is Chris Walker.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, Chris is the one that saved me. I was telling him about how the meeting was canceled and I was gonna go do something else.
So before we get to the Cougar update, we'll give Aaron a minute to get our computer fired up and the recorder going. So Aaron, we have notes from the update for Fall Creek and Detroit that we'll share with you.
Great, thank you.
Okay, you guys.
Oh.
Don't kill yourselves.
I'll ask a question of Jeff while she's setting up. So the 95% is for the FSS that we'll see in May, right?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm helping with the cord. What's that?
It is.
So the 95% that we'll see in May is for the FSS.
Yes.
And I'm trying to just remember, where does that stop, where it gets put on hold?
Pretty much right after that.
Right there, so we won't see really anything after that document until we pick it up again.
Maybe a back check.
It's a back check.
Okay.
Incorporated comments. But then, yeah, that gets put on the shelf while we do plans and specs and then start construction. Our plan is somewhere around the start of construction, actual construction on the ground.
What was going on
there?
We
would pick up that DDR, see if there's any changes we should make to it.
Right.
With either things we've changed on the tower design or other lessons learned throughout the region to change the collector and then move through that process to get that moved up into plan specs and then construct.
Okay. And since we're talking about reviews, we do have two reports, design reports that are out for review. Comments were due on March 1, the high head bypass 75% design parameter report, and the Detroit, which one? The 90%. I get confused between the FSS and the SWS.
Isn't it the revised 60?
The revised 60 SWS DDR
right.
is out. And I think we've been getting comments.
Yeah, so comments,
yeah, got comments on
both that. Of them, the comments were due on March 1, and so comments are starting to roll in, and between ODF and W, some of the agencies asked for another couple of days. I don't remember who and what, but just a reminder, if we could get those comments from those two reports soon, it would be really helpful so we can go on to the next steps, address those comments, and move on to the next steps. Aaron, are you up and running?
Yeah, it's just about set here, so
okay.
Trying to warm up, so you can go ahead.
Yeah, our next update then will be the Cougar Downstream Passage, and Scott Fielding, I don't know if Eric is back on the phone or not, but Scott is here in the room, so maybe he can give an update and tell us a little bit about the model visit.
Yep, so on February 20th and 21st, the small core team went up and saw the model. We got to see it run. We got to see full 1,000 CFS. We also got to see the 600 CFS and the 400 CFS barrel. It was impressive, and it was far better than what I had imagined it was gonna be. So parts of the model aren't configured properly yet, so we have to do some amendments to the contract. So they are currently working on some updates to the contract through our core process, and we are hoping so that way we can get it closer to what the prototype is, which I learned the prototype is the actual FSS, which I did not know that. That's what we call the prototype, is what it'll
That's
be
true.
Built as.
That's the hydraulic engineer term.
It is.
So that was a new one for
model
me.
Model prototype, yeah.
Those mods are gonna be made. We are hoping that the next trip, which you all will be invited to, would be the week of March 26th. So The agency period to be there would be on March 27th. That gives us the core of the March 26th to do any more little adjustments. So if that date changes, and I should find out today, I will make sure that you know. So it's a pretty cool model, though.
And I think right now most folks, I know Kelly for ODFW and for NIMS, they were planning on that March 26th, 27th trip. So
the goal is to have everything in place and ready.
Right. So keep that date on your calendar, and Scott will update you if the date shifts or changes.
And I do believe I sent key people or some people that responded before some pictures of the model that from our visit up there.
Out of curiosity and really for planning for the Cougar PDT, aside from NIMS and ODFW, are any of the other agency reps planning to go, Mike, or you, or anybody from Fish and Wildlife planning to go?
I don't have plans to go right now.
Okay, Lawrence, is anybody, you or anybody from the tribe planning to go on that Cougar model trip in Everett?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Do you have...
Hey, Ken, would it be possible to see some of those photos from the model that were taken?
Maybe the ones that were sent could be sent to all of this mailing list, because only a few people got them here at NIMS too.
Yes, I don't have them right now, but we will send them out to the Fitaway.
So I'll send them to Fenton, and you can send them out.
I'll send them out when we send out the meeting minutes. I'll get them from
Great,
Scott.
Great, thanks very much.
Yes, and then whatever pictures they take on the next visit with any changes, we'll get those all sent out to the group. So right now, it sounds like we only have ODFW and NIMS planning to visit. BPA, were you guys planning to visit? Mark or Josh?
Excuse me, could you restate the question?
Oh, we were just wondering if you were planning to visit the Cougar model representing BPA.
We were not planning.
Okay. Well, we had that big snowstorm last week down in the Eugene area, and it was pretty impressive. I actually had some dive missions at Lookout Point on Foster that we had to cancel because of the amount of snow, but we got some really cool pictures from the folks in the valley of what Cougar Forebay looks like, and Scott and I thought it would be good to show you in the event of something like that. That's the PFFC snowed in. So as we're designing a floating fish collector for Cougar, that's the Cougar Reservoir right there, the cul-de-sac, and the PFFC snowed in or iced in. There's a road going up. They just recently cleared a road. The commander was down there, and I heard him and Eric Peterson have to snowshoe in. So again, considering if we had people up there servicing the FSS and we have a storm like this, they won't have access until the trees are cleared. There's the PFFC, and the FSS would be somewhere over here, right, Scott?
Yes.
So this is the tower. This is the cul-de-sac.
Wow.
And Todd, you can add in anything that if I'm saying incorrectly, but I just got these pictures yesterday.
We are talking about having people up there all the time.
Right, so that's what I'm pointing out. Granted, these storms, you know, might occur every few years or every 10 years, or given climate change, I know that's made up, but it could occur every year. But again, the that access road that we were going to be taking the trucks or the boats up and down is right about here, somewhere along here. So imagine if we had a crew out there and we had one of these storms come through with, you know, a couple of feet of snow and everything is iced in and there's no access.
So I don't think it's if we have a crew out there, it's the crew that's out there.
Right, it's the wind.
It is 24/7.
So there's a couple of our guys. So those pictures were taken by a drone, by the way, in case you're wondering. And there's Todd Manny, one of our dive safety. There was snowshoeing in. So those pictures were taken by a drone, not by people up there.
Well, operator was stuck there for like 4 days.
Yep. And an operator was stuck there. I heard he was eating MREs. I guess they keep MREs on site for these kinds of emergencies. So anyway, we wanted to share those pictures with folks to, you know, these are things we have to consider, and Detroit should consider that too, because they got snow at Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, Detroit's got a bigger reservoir, but all these are the things that could happen, and you have to consider when you have personnel and fish that you have to move.
They're not just high head downs, they're high elevation. Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So one advantage that Detroit has, and I'm not saying it can't have this exact same scenario, but it's right off the highway.
Right.
Whereas Tudor has a mile or two or whatever it is,
yeah,
of our own road or Forest Service road.
Fallen trees and all of that, you know.
Now, I did see the pictures of Highway 58, and it was just as big a mess, if not more.
Yeah.
But at least it had a whole lot of visibility and a whole lot of people out there trying to clear it instead
right.
of just us. And I believe we got BPA's line maintenance crews to come out and help clear these logs.
That is what happened, right. So this is the road before they even cleared it. This is this same road here, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so too.
Yeah. So, and this is the road that goes up to the powerhouse and the tower. So,
this
so I imagine...
tree down across it.
Yeah.
Snow.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, there's Todd and his drone getting ready to send it off.
So we just have to get FSS personnel chainsaw trained.
And snowshoes.
And snowshoes.
Oh, can't those amphibious vehicles make that?
Ask, yeah, there you go. There's a good point. Right.
Just put some tracks on
yeah.
there.
That's true. Yeah, put some tracks on it. Just get an M1A1 Abrams tank.
There you go.
So anyway, we wanted to share those pictures with you. So again, these are things that we have to consider because, you know, Mother Nature is going to dump on us. All right, so Melissa just joined us for folks on the phone. Melissa from NIPS, Melissa Jung. So we had the Cougar update, and any questions on the Cougar update or the site visit that Scott is coordinating for the team on the 27th?
So is there an update on the plans and specs that maybe Erica has, if she's on the phone?
I am. I stepped away
okay.
real quick while you guys were waiting for someone to come into the room. So, yes, the plans and specs, 30% will be going through the DQC process starting on the 15th. And by the time it gets through our internal reviews and it's ready for your review, we're looking at early April. I actually don't have the schedule right in front of me, but that's when you would be expecting to get the 30% plans and specs for the Federwig review.
So Erica, would you, if you're able to stay on that schedule, then would you do the 30% presentation of the April meeting and then send it out? April meeting is right now is on April 2nd.
Let me see if I can find my schedule and let you know. I hesitate to agree to that right now, so I'll have to review my schedule.
Yeah, and that's fine. I'm not looking for a commitment. We already have Detroit presenting at the April 2nd meeting, so I'll talk to you and Chris and Scott and see how we can get those dates and or if we do the plans and specs in May or something, because it sounds like we already have a full agenda for April.
Yeah, it would definitely be beneficial to have them separate.
Yeah, yeah.
But in May, we're going to have another Detroit, the fish collector meeting. Our presentation anyway. So
yeah.
Either way, so, it's going to be two presentations.
Right. So we'll work. It's still a month away, so we'll see. We'll fit it in one of those two meetings whenever you're ready.
Okay.
Good deal. Any other thoughts, questions for Cougar before we move on? All right. High head bypass update, Jeff.
So on high head bypass, we had our design parameters documented. I believe we got some comments back on that.
We received comments from ODF&W, and NIMS asked for a little bit of an extension.
Okay. And then, along with that, we're working still to get contractor under contract to do the Cougar and Detroit EDRs for high head bypass. And that process has taken a bit longer than we had hoped, but we're still plugging away at it. And as soon as we have them under contract, we'll be setting out when we're going to have those different meetings. You know, we talked about the brainstorming sort of session to sort out the different alternatives of what high head bypass can look like. And we will, you'll hear more about that, but until we get a contractor actually in place, there's nothing much to say. The only other thing I would say is the contract is being structured because of funding reasons to where Cougar is mandatory, and it's the first fish facility that hits the streets here. But Cougar's mandatory, Detroit's an option. And I don't know when or if or how we will award the Detroit piece of that, but we'll keep on top of that. So those first set of brainstorming session meetings, it'll just be for the Cougar portion of it.
Yeah, so just to summarize, once we have the contract in place and give the contractor some time to get things settled, we'll schedule a workshop. And it might be a special workshop given that our regular fitterwork times seem to be filled up with presentations, but it could be a half a day or an all-day workshop with all of us brainstorming.
It's likely in the April timeframe would be my guess. That's reasonable.
All right.
And Bree Phillips is the TL for the Cougar portion of that effort, and Ryan is the TL for the Detroit portion. But Ryan's, even if the Detroit isn't awarded, Ryan's going to stay involved so he knows what's going on and can help out with the whole process.
Thanks, Jeff. Any questions for Jeff for high head bypass and schedule? Thanks again for those who have reviewed our design parameter report. And I know it's time consuming, so appreciate that. And then we're happy to give some more time so that we can get some comments back from folks. All right, we're going to move into the meat and potatoes of our meeting today. And we have two presentations, Foster Downstream Passage for the fish weir improvements, and then Upstream Passage for the ladder improvements. And we'll start with the Foster Downstream Passage PDT. But before I get going, just remind folks, if you want to get up and stretch, there's cookies and other goodies and coffee and all that compliments of fentanyl hymns. So help yourself. Folks on the phone, sorry, you can just imagine it. So we'll start with the Foster Downstream Passage presentation. And there we go. It takes a while for these messages to send to each other. And so Steve Sipe sitting over here is the PM. Everybody knows me. I'm Fenton, the biologist. Tyler McGill is the structural engineer and the tech lead, and he's not here today. And then we have Jonathan sitting across the room, is a mechanical engineer on the team. So I'll walk through it, and then Jonathan and Steve will back me up when we get to our alternatives that we've considered so far. And then we're looking for input from the Fitwig on how to move forward with the weir. So we'll talk a little bit about the weir delivery, our R&E testing to date of why we're still working on the weir, and then our alternatives that the PDT developed to present to this team, and then solicit any input or maybe other ideas and questions and discussions. So yeah, this was last year when the weir was delivered right after science review. So again, lots of snow in the valley. So the new weir was delivered in early March, and we installed it at the beginning of March. This is me lifting 22,000 pounds of steel. And we started right away, we started our post-construction evaluation, R&E data collection with live fish, balloon tagged fish, sensor fish, and also radio tagged fish. You're gonna hear all of those presentations next week at Science Review. So I'm not here to present data. However, the preliminary data, and I was in the field during the testing, showed that we are seeing a high rate of injury and mortality occurring with fish passing over the weir. So that was enough to raise the alarm bells and come back to the PDT and say, we still have some work to do. And so our PDT reconvened, and the preliminary data from the sensor fish showed that most of the injuries, I wonder why you can't see the pulse up there. Anyway, the red arrows are pointing where the injuries are occurring. Most of the injuries are occurring with strikes, with water coming over the weir and hitting that bald spot, that black spot right there. And then secondary injuries occur as Fisher sliding down the spillway, his chute is rolling and tumbling, and there's a lot of bruises and scrapes. Again, you're going to see all of this at Science Review next week. And so what we found out is because the old weir was spanned pretty much the entire spillway, it was about 45 feet wide, and it only had about a foot and a half or 2 feet ahead. But when that waterfall came over the weir, it landed on the spillway, which is about 50 feet, so the water didn't spread out anymore. So even if it was a shallow amount of water, it didn't spread out. With this new weir, the opening is about 8 feet, or no, it's 14 feet, sorry. And it's about 4 feet of head. But when notice when the water falls over, for some reason I can't point, oh, there we go. When the water comes over the weir and falls, it spreads out to cover that 50 feet. So what happens is we end up with a bald spot. That is actually concrete you were seeing there. That was alarming alone. I was standing right over here and I was like, that is not good. So, and then the fish, then there's just a thin layer of water that goes down the spillway chute, and we've seen the fish and sensor fish just rolling and tumbling down. So, came back to the PDT and say, hey, we have a problem. And sensor fish told us that these are the two problem areas. So, we, as the PDT, brainstormed eight potential ideas that we'll walk through here today. Modification to the fish weir, the putting on some concrete walls, training walls on the spillway itself to keep that water in, pipe, inflatable water catch, which is like those inflatable rafts you see on airplanes when they have an emergency and the door open, you can come slip and slide. I like that idea because I thought we could have a Fidwick meeting out there in the summer and try it out, but people didn't like that. Damn safety and...
All the paperwork.
Yeah. And so we've got... I'm not going to read all of this because we're going to go through each one in detail, but we, as a PDT, developed eight, and we're going to present them today with some pros and cons and also solicit any ideas that we didn't consider that, that this group might have. And so I'll walk through, Jonathan, and then as we get to one of these engineering ones... I might throw it over to you to explain a little bit some more, or to Steve. Okay, so our first one is modifying the fish weir. And this one simply means pulling out the weir and going back to the redesign. And there's a lot of words up here, but we determined that there's not much more we can do to the weir because it fits in a Rodex slot and it's already a tight fit. There's only about 3 inches that we have to fit it through the slot. So there's not much more we can really modify the weir. The good news, I forgot to mention in the Harmony data, and again, you're going to hear this next week, is the collection efficiency up front of the weir greatly improved. That was really good. So there's good news to share. It's not all bad. So we're passing more fish, but we're also injuring them. But compared to the old weir, the collection efficiency, especially for Chinook, greatly improved. So there's the good news, bad news.
Is there a net increase in of fish that survived compared to the old weir?
Yes, and oh, you're going to get all that next week.
Okay.
You know, we're not going to present data here today. So this alternative, the PDT decided we really can't carry forward this one because it would mean really going back to the drawing board and redesigning the whole weir. And there's not much we can really do with the shape or any of that. Our second alternative is putting in the walls, those concrete walls, to keep the water in. And that's what these red lines are. So it would actually keep the water in. And so we thought that would be a really cool idea until, damn safe, if I can get my mouse, oh, here we go. Until damn safety and everybody else says we can't change the spillway permanently because of damn safety reasons. These spillways are designed to pass water for the maximum probable flood or whatever they call it. The Noah's flood. The 100-year flood. And we have to be able to return the spillway to regular spill at any time. So putting in concrete walls is not really going to work because the hydraulics is going to get all jacked up. So we decided that we it's not feasible to carry this alternative forward. So now we start going into some other things we can do. And this is a pipe from the fish weir down to the spillway surface, and this is Jonathan's drawing, but it would be a pipe that would just go from the fish weir itself underneath the spill gate. You can see the spill gate there, and then bring the fish down. I wonder when my mouse disappears. I gotta keep it here. And then he would bring the fish down to just above the concrete chute and carry the fish down. But we'd have to, how do you attach this pipe? How do you pull the fish rear if you need to? Multiple pipes would be needed for the two different pool elevations. This started to become really convoluted, and then we also have to look at operations and maintenance. How fast can you get all this contraption out? The pipe has to fit between the gate, and there's not much space between the gate and the actual weir. So, and then there was concerns of, now it's a pipe, so now it's almost like a bypass pipe, so now there is what, you gotta worry about debris, you gotta worry, you know, debris caught in that pipe, and now we've got these right angles here, that's not gonna be good. And then dam safety concerns, how do you support the pipe? So we put this one on the back burner and said, this doesn't really look feasible. Our next one is the inflatable catch. And Jonathan, do you want to explain this one?
Sure. basically, this is, you know, C-shape's a little bit of a difficult term to understand, but it's basically just a big inflatable tube. And the idea was we're trying to create some sort of angle to, you know, right where those water streams are hitting the spillway. It's hitting pretty much at a 90 degree angle. The spillway is only at the maximum angle is only 30 degrees, and right where it's hitting, it's about 20 or so degrees. And so the idea there was if we can get that closer to 45, the water's not going to want to blow backwards as much. It's going to want to go down the spillway, and it's not going to create as much of a bald spot. So the idea here was to use an inflatable tube with a rubber flap going over it. And you could inflate it and shrink it to adjust for the different water streams coming in and out. But this one has other issues. Because of the location, you can kind of see there where the tanner gate seals
right
on
here.
The spillway. Everything this would entail would mean that the spillway or the tanner gate needs to seal on top of this, which is why it was chosen to be inflatable. That means having rubber mounted to the spillway all the way across. In order to create a clean seal line. There's concerns about dam safety with putting anything under the tanner gate seal. It's not ideal. So we put this one on the back burner as well.
And stop us as we go through these if you have any questions. Folks on the phone, don't be afraid to speak up if something doesn't make sense or we're going too fast or you have a question. We don't need to wait until the end because we're going through each one of these step by step.
So this is a similar idea to the one before, but not inflatable. This is one of the earlier ideas. And this is basically a solid angled object to allow that flow to hit a steeper angle. Because of the fact that the tanner gate goes all the way across the spillway from pier face to pier face, it would need a small flat section about halfway down the angle for the tanner gate to seal on. And, you know, this would be a very large object, 15 feet down the spillway at least, and 45 feet from pier face to pier face. And how this would be removed is not clear. In addition, it's not ideal, once again, to have the tanner gate sealing on, you know, something that's not the spillway face. So this one was also put on the back burner.
So again, constructability and dam safety. Yeah, go ahead, Elise.
Sorry, I just have a question. I'm having trouble imagining this. And so if I'm looking at the drawing, I'm assuming I'm looking at it in cross-section. And so that line is coming over and hitting the pie-shaped wedge. And I'm just assuming that line is the water, right? It says the high water, headwater jet. And so is what would happen is fish would come over on that water and then hit the pie-shaped wedge?
Yeah.
I'm a little unclear on how that improves things.
It's not certain that it does significantly improve passage, especially in this instance where there's nothing. With the inflatable catch that I was referring to before, option four, I think, it would be C-shaped, so there would be walls to kind of keep the water from flowing towards the outside edges of the spillway, towards those pier faces. In this situation, that's not possible because of the way the tanner gate has to seal on it.
So all you would be really doing is slightly reducing the angle of the stream as it hits, and hopefully reducing the energy dissipation as it hits the spillway. But as far as really helping to get that pool level, the water level, where right where it hits, increasing that much, this is, it's not clear that this would significantly help, no.
Right, and this this wedge, if you remember from the original, my earlier slide where I showed the water spreading out and it's backing up behind the weir, our thought was this wedge would create the water from backing up behind the weir and provide a better angle. So this little blue line would be the pretend fish coming down. So it would hit it at a better angle and not straight down. And also we wouldn't have water backing up behind the weir, so maybe that might provide a little bit of a cushion. But our hydraulic modeling, like Jonathan says, we did some hydraulic modeling and it wasn't looking as promising. And again, because of dam safety and because of this didn't look promising, and then the construction alone of putting this in and taking it out, the PDT decided not to evaluate any further, put this one on the back burner.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, sorry for not knowing this, but can we talk briefly about the tanker gate, like where it is in the two different high pool and low pool operations?
Sure.
Just to help us visualize.
Yeah, so this dotted line here is a tanker gate. So flow is from, if you're looking at this, flow is from left to right. So there's the fish weir. So flow comes over.
So that's high pool fish weir.
Yes. And so this is high pool fish weir because it is the worst case scenario. And so this is the flow. This is the center line of the flow. This is the back end. So the top end of the flow would be somewhere here.
That's the actual low pool flow.
Anyway, this gate would normally be open, so it wouldn't be closed. But we have it here closed because if we had to close the gate, where would it go? But normally it would be open, so this water wouldn't be hitting the gate if we're operating it.
Right. So this is, we need to operate. We need to be able to drop that tanker gate at any time.
At any time, right.
And with the high flow pool, or the high flow water actually goes past the ceiling surface of the tanker gate.
Yeah. The way
so
that
it would actually hit the tanker gate.
If the gate is closed, this is what would happen. And we open the weir, the flow would just pull up here. So the gate is normally open, but dam safety has to be able to close this gate, you know, on the fly or at least within. Right now, they can close it right away and then take a day or so to pull the weir to prepare for any flooding going on. But if we've got, now we've got to send people down here in a man basket or something to remove this contraption. Plus, this gate has to close on top of it, and they already said, no, the gate has to seal on the concrete. We can't have any objects right there.
It's important to notice that the sort of limit they've given us on returning the spillway to what, you know, full capacity, normal operation, whatever that really means, is 24 hours, including pulling of the fish weir, the current fish weir, and all the stop logs that it rests upon.
All of this. Diana, did that answer your question with the gate operations?
And so, just to be clear, the second curved line coming off is the low pool center line.
Yeah, this one here. So there's high pool and there's low pool. But again, either way, this gate is normally open. So, but when it's closed, this is how it would be if the water would just pull up behind here. Folks on the phone, did that make sense with how the spillway gate is operated? Take that as a yes.
Yes.
All right, so move on to the next one.
This one's a bit of a out there idea. This was an idea to create a shell-shaped catch. So it would have a curved shape, which would be a little bit better than that flat angle that we were referencing, to catch the water and direct it downstream on a smoother trajectory. And the idea here was, not knowing how that 45 degree angle one we just looked at, well, what if we put it on wheels and we made it a shell shape so that it had sidewalls too to prevent that water from spreading towards the pier faces. Because of that, you can't have the tanner gate seal on it, so it has to be able to move out of the way of the gate, and that means putting it on wheels. Our best idea for sort of moving it into place was cables through some sort of pulley system. This rapidly approached
very complicated, very difficult, very expensive. Because of that, put on the back burner.
And the idea would be, since it's on wheels, as Jonathan mentioned, if they have to close this gate, they would, on this whole pulley contraption, be able to lower this down the spillway chute and close the gate and then deal with taking it out after that. But again, because of dam safety, because this became really convoluted, and also one of the things we have to look to is the long term. Remember, this weir is the final fix for passage at Foster. So whatever we do is long term. And so, you know, O&M, what is all of this going to be for O&M down the road sometime when we hand the keys over to Foster and say, this is how you operate the fish weir. So given all of that dam safety, constructability, this became really convoluted. And again, our hydraulic modeling was, you know, on the fence of if this is promising or not. We probably have to do some kind of a prototype first to see if this really makes sense. So we decided again, the PDT decided this, we would not bring this forward for further analysis, put it on the back burner. We can always pull it back out if we need to consider it.
This idea is the sort of water slide idea that Fenton referenced, the airplane slip and slide. An inflatable flume mounted to the back of the weir, and this would cut loose in the event that tanner gate needed to be lowered and the spillway needed to be returned. And from there, it would be allowed to wash down the spillway, and then operations would retrieve it, fish it out with a boat, and when you know you wanted to put it back, you just go and mount it up. There were concerns here about any sort of inflated object being able to support the kind of loads of that water stream, debris going over the edge, and it would be mounted directly to the back of the current fish weir. And it was not designed any sort of additional loads. And this would be significant additional loading. And you know how this would be attached to the back of that weir, it would have to be either remotely removable or bolts that would break. And then the likelihood of damage to the flume as it washed down the spillway, controlling that is difficult. So,
but the idea would be we would be able to just, or they would be able to cut it loose, let it flow down, and go pick it up somewhere down the road. But again, constructability, how you attach it, the loading and all that, we decided to, as cool as a slip and slide sounds in the summertime, we decided to put this on the back burner. So now we're at our number 8 alternative, which is promising. We actually have two ideas for this. And this is creating a landing pool, like a plunge pool, for where the fish is landing, that bald spot that I showed you in that picture. And how we do that is, so we have two ideas of how to do this landing pool, and both of these look promising. Back over to Jonathan.
Yeah, so, talking about building a landing pool, and current hydraulic estimates put the necessary depth at about 1 foot, but that's being constantly refined by hydraulics to try to figure out how deep this pool needs to be to effectively dissipate the energy of these streams and allow the fish to land safely. So that 1 foot would be for the lower pool, which lands higher up the spillway. That would effectively put the landing for the higher pool at about 3.5 feet or so. So that means building a gate across the spillway just downstream of that of about 5-ish feet or so. And the idea is that one section of that gate, this would extend from pier face to pier face all the way across the spillway, and one section of that gate would be lower to create a secondary weir with a much shorter, safer fall distance for the fish. We have two ideas for that. The first is a static removable slide gate, and this would have holes drilled into the spillway face and I-beams or some other sort of bollard style object dropped into these holes to act as gate slots for slide gates. And then all of this would be craned out in the event that the spillway wanted to be returned to normal use, and those holes for those I-beams or bollard slots would be filled with some sort of plug object, and everything returned to normal use.
Yeah, so again, just to give folks an idea, so it's really creating a big pool here and then having a secondary weir. So just think of a big gate across the entire spillway that holds the water back. And so we'd have at least a foot or two at the low flow. So at higher flow, you'll have a deeper depth where the fish would land. And then they would, this pool would be, this gate is on the downstream end of the Tater Gate, so they can still close this gate without any obstruction. We don't know the distance yet. This is all still to be worked out. Again, this is an idea. We're waiting on calculations from hydraulics. But regardless, as John just says, we'll be able to pull these gates out with a crane from the road deck or somewhere, should they need to return this bait to regular service. And these holes will be plugged. I'm not sure it's going to be like a flip that, or a flap that closes when you pull the gates. You know, those details to be worked out, but we could easily return this gate, this bait of regular service within that 24-hour period. So this looks promising. So this is number 8A, and then B, same idea, but I'll let Jonathan take it back again.
Yeah, so this is there's a company called Obermeyer Hydro, based out of Colorado, I think. And they produce pneumatically actuated hinge gates. And these are generally placed at the spillway crest to act as the spillway gate. But in this situation, we would be placing it in the same place we talked about before to build a pool again. These are actuated by an inflatable rubber bag, basically, underneath the gate. It can be filled with air or water. And so this creates a pool as well. And these are appealing for a lot of reasons. They can be remotely operated very quickly. And when they're lowered, they have no effect on the spillway capacity, and they can be lowered very fast. We're still getting hydraulic analysis to verify 100% that they're not going to affect spillway capacity in any way.
It's low enough now, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, that's our impression as well.
We're going to say Steve Schlenker said.
Yeah, don't quote me.
And so you would have about five individually actuated sections from pier face to pier face all the way across the spillway. And it's also versatile. So, you know, depending on where we wanted to create that secondary weir and allow the fish to go over, you just would lower one individual section of this whole gate, and you could do that.
And we can also lower it from remotely from the deck if we had debris or something coming over. You can just drop them all again, like a ramp. I think most folks here are familiar with Obermeyer, but you know, we can drop them remotely, flush out any debris or anything else. You know, move these gates up and down depending on what we see. So. This one here looks really, really promising, and like I said, we're waiting on hydraulic calculations. Steve just said shouldn't be a problem.
So we're gonna go with that.
You can see the profile with the gates dropped all the way down. Dam Safety like the idea. The O&M, the Foster people like the idea. Because again, it's not a lot of O&M.
And in fact, the yellow you see there is actually just a thin rib to give additional support. So when it's flat, the actual change to the hydraulic surface is pretty small.
Right.
Yeah.
And the flow control is happening through the at the crest and through the spillway gate. So if that's a little bit downstream, like it's shown there, won't reduce the flow.
Yeah, we're looking at approximately 15 feet downstream.
And
yeah.
It's bolted into the concrete, like you can see right here, this dark bolt. And see if he didn't have an issue with that either. So this one here, this is our last one. I put it for last because it's the best. These are our eight ideas, or nine if you count eight as one and two, ideas right now. And the eighth one, the one of creating this plunge pool with either the bollocks type gates that you have to manually remove with a crane or the Obermeyer gate, both of those look really promising. And so that's what we come up with. And you know, we'll leave it with some questions or discussions, or I can flip back through any of those slides if we have any questions. Also, we're here to ask if this group has any other ideas that you think we can do. Keeping in mind, you know, we have all those restrictions, dam safety and returning the gate to regular service within 24 hours,
We really can't do much more to the weir itself.
And it is pretty impressive. Fenton actually got a video, and you can see the fish coming in the surface stream of the plunge hitting the spillway as it comes down. So
Fenton, this is Elise. I have a few questions, actually. The first one is, how easy is it to fix these hinge gates and inflatable bags if something goes wrong with them?
It will require some maintenance, but Obermeyer has been around for a long time. They actually have Lebanon right below Foster has them on their spillway for I don't remember how many years, and they never had an issue. So we're putting them in right now at Mountain Dam up for Seattle District. These gates, once they're in, and those air inflatable airbags, require very little to no maintenance or replacement for over 10 to 20 years. Granted, there will probably be some O&M built into it down the road, and that'll be part of the Foster Project O&M. You know, they'll do their annual or biannual inspections and all of that. But as far as having to go in and repair anything, we've done a lot of research in Obermeyer, and they never have a problem. I don't remember how long the ones at Lebanon have been in, but I think it's over 10 years, maybe even longer. And they haven't had to turn a screw.
And from a design perspective, you have a metal plate is really what your water surface is. So you're not having the airbag or the rubber surface getting damaged or anything. It's really the metal plate, and it works pretty well.
Elise, this is Melissa John. I was going to say, this is a widely used product. They have a good track record.
Okay, thanks. And then will this approach also solve the second issue downstream further on the spillway where the fish are rolling down?
I'm glad you asked that, because that was what we're going to finish this with, is but I was hoping somebody would bring that up. So it will, not necessarily that gate itself. So we wanted to solve, the first problem was the big strike where this dark area was. And then our idea, and again, this is just an idea, we haven't really carried forward it, is we would attach some kind of like a log boom, like those tough boom, like retraining walls, but it would be temporary, that would be attached to those gates that go down the spillway here. Kind of like the first idea with the concrete walls, but these would be the temporary log booms that would go, and they would be joined, so they wouldn't spread out, and they would keep the water in, therefore creating a deeper pool so the fish aren't sliding and rolling down. And then that could easily be removed should they need to return to be at a regular service.
So we have considered that, but we haven't developed that portion yet.
Yeah, we have to figure out what the first part is before we do the second part.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, two questions. And I don't know if you guys thought about this or if we even, I don't know what the answers are, but is there any concern of TG building up in a static pool, number one? And number two, is there any concern of fish that come into that pool hanging up in there? And if there is a TG buildup, being exposed to it that much longer?
Yes, and yes, we have considered all of that. And as a matter of fact, I brought it up with the team as soon as we start talking about this pool. And we'd have to evaluate the TDG. Maybe there's some data back that we can go and look at for a pool, you know, this size and this much flow. But again, the idea is, regardless of if we use the static one with the manual weirs that we can pull, we'd have it set at an elevation that we shouldn't be delaying fish, or fish shouldn't be swimming around searching. There should have an outlet. I believe what hydraulics is calculating right now, but this isn't set in stone, is the outlet for this weir will be about the same size as this one up here, the same 14 foot. So it's not, there wouldn't be a small outlet that fish would be wandering around, and then they would be attracted to the flow. The promising thing about the Obermeyer gates is that we can operate those remotely, and if we see that, you know, when we're doing our arm and E, that we need to lower them some more, raise them some more, move this one, or use one on the far end or far right, we'd be able to do that easily. The manual one, we'd still be able to do it, but we'd have to, crane the gates around. But yes, we are considering TDG and delaying the fish, you know, if they're, they're lost and their debris, because debris will pass, and we don't want debris swirling around in there with the fish. So
the preliminary TDG discussion was, as long as you're not going below, there's a certain depth where you start to entrain the water, and it's got to be a deeper depth. So that's one of the calculations we're doing, is verifying the depth we're talking about here won't cause increased TDG.
That's what I, that wouldn't, that sounds right to me, but I don't know for sure.
Right, you get the we got two Steves.
Any
both Steves said that.
Any other questions? Any thoughts or comments on our alternatives or ideas?
So this is, these are, all these ideas are being written up as, in, as a follow-on to the original EDR document.
Yes, and one, we will circulate that. It's an add-on to the original fish. We're not starting a whole new project. It's the same PDT. A couple of members switched around, so this would be like an add-on or an appendix to that EDR. But we will send that report out for federal review, and these alternatives and all the details are going to be written up in there. But do...
Can I ask a question that hasn't been vetted by Melissa, so she might shake her head at me when I ask it?
That's what we're here for.
Which way do I shake it?
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
The group doesn't even need to respond. You shake your head.
Oh, okay.
Just in terms of, like, if the plunge pool, for some reason, turned out not to work either because of the PG issue, or it had to be set far enough back that you're talking about, like, a huge gate and a really deep plunge pool, if something like that happened, I didn't know if this device could be applied in a different orientation. Like, could it, like you said, we're trying to recreate the log booms, the first option. Can these things be placed, like, parallel to the direction of flow in that area where the tanner gate operates,
but
and create, like, because I don't know, and this is the Melissa question to, and to other bios, is like, is the,
it is,
and it's
I think they're
about,
usually
like,
whether, meant to be directly facing the flow,
right, and
not having it bypassing,
but
I don't know.
Cool idea.
Well, and the biological
question
is whether
that's
a plunge pool is better or a laminar flow is better, and what we'd be looking at here too, so I don't even know if it's possible, but
it's a cool idea.
That was, or if they don't work that way. If they require more bolts to the dam or something that takes it off.
Yeah, I don't know. Jonathan has been talking to Obermeyer, but again, I think that the way the gates are, they're
designed to go
that way, not sideways, but I don't know.
There was the option to use just the inflatable parts as sort of sidewalls.
Okay.
But they said they never really used them in that way. That they had never, they would have to do quite a bit of research into how it would affect them to have water flowing in line with them as a sort of wall, sidewall dam. They said they believed it could work, but
there's another company that does do just the ladders, but they tend to roll. You don't have great, you know, just flow straight over them. They tend to kind of roll.
Yeah. And then you'd have to do the whole bolting them all the way down.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, or you bolt them for the distance, you wouldn't interfere, right? And then you could do the log boom thing the rest of the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's
a cool idea. Yeah. And then we would still be able to maintain that water.
You do run into the issue with where those things are landing. If it continues to go up the sides, you'd start to get into where that tanner gate seals. And that's really what
so you have to channel so far up that you ended up.
Well, and then see what we're trying to prevent is this backwater. That's the water from spreading out back, and that's creating this bald spot. So that's why, aside from the old AMC food or concrete walls, or even some of those other ideas that Jonathan was discussing, anything underneath this gate will have to, this gate has to seal on directly on the concrete, so we'd have to have a gap or something. But then we still have this water backing up behind there. But the plunge pool idea, with a gate across here, this whole area now becomes one big pool.
Yeah.
So no more water will back up. And then somewhere, what is down in the direct center is where we would have our weir. Yeah. Or if it's the old Meyer gate, that gate will be lower. But yeah, it'll be notched. And again, we'll do our studies to say, do we lower the middle one, or is it one of the end ones?
Or you might want to make it like the weir that you had before, where you just have it spill over uniformly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's enough.
Yeah.
We hadn't done that calc, so I know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just an idea.
So when you had the old weir in there, it was full width. Did you have fish survival problems on the spillway?
We did. That's why we built a new weir.
I thought it was just for collection of fish.
No. We had the old weir was we had a higher rate of injury and survival.
From
the tumbling, not from the impact. Right.
Not from the impact, from the tumbling, right, because we didn't have a bald spot.
Right.
Water wasn't backing up because it didn't spread out anymore.
I was just thinking if you didn't have problems back then, if you put the weir all the way, this Obermeyer or whatever it is, weir all the way across, you made that pool, and if you could get hydraulic conditions so it was evenly overtopping that weir and then evenly flowing downstream, you wouldn't have that backup and all the turbulence going on in the stone, on the spillway. But if the old weir had the problem, then that would still
happen. That doesn't work.
The nice thing about the Obermeyers, too, is how many of them across do you have?
We're thinking five, but that's a design question that we can...
That's what I like with it, is you can adjust them, or maybe you lower them all, or...
Right.
The more you have, though, the more expensive and...
Complicated the operations.
It gets. So, in general, it's best to have fewer, but, you know, there's a good balance there.
So, I mean, even five across the 45 foot is, is reasonable.
Yeah, you can have two lower or three lower.
Right. And I like the idea that you can lower them to pass debris or
flush it,
yeah.
So these secondary injuries, I know that's not the primary point of this presentation, but with the remaining part of the spillway, it was mostly abrasion.
Mm-hmm. They're rubbing
because
and
rolling. Because it's so shallow.
Yeah.
So going forward, is one of the questions going to be coating or some type of coating to smooth out? Is that an option?
We hadn't gone down that, but...
We haven't thought of coating yet.
I mean, a log system, might work, but if it's just abrasion that we're worried about with the fish, there is enough flow over it to keep them
See is the fish... you couldn't see the juvenile fish as much because they're caught up in the white, but the sensor fish is pretty much rolling down.
Okay.
And then the adult fish, you can actually see them just rolling and tumbling. And when we retrieved them, there was a lot of descaling and abrasion, bruising.
So that would be something to look into.
Yeah.
It's a very rough surface.
That's why we're having this meeting.
It's a broken concrete.
Ideas. So it's kind of got projecting.
Thank you for that.
Sharp points.
River rocks.
With like a Teflon coating.
Yeah, sure.
Jonathan, you got some homework to do.
Oh, there's some epoxy coating.
Yeah.
Wait, aren't we doing a coating project? Is Natalie doing?
We might still want to consider that part of this project regardless, so that we provide a easier.
Just work for John.
So I got an idea, but normally I would catch you afterwards, but since we're throwing out ideas, if you could go back just one slide or something to one of those cross-section views. Have you thought about, that's a perfect one, not moving the teener gate all the way up, but just cracking it an inch or two, and building up a pool behind so that the fish only fall, and maybe they hit the skin plate of the teener gate, but then kind of roll down into a pool that's between the weir and the teener gate, and then they flush out through the minimum opening below.
We did.
Okay.
And we didn't even put this up here because one is, you could see the fish are going to be hitting this teener gate already pretty hard from up here.
I was hoping it wasn't that far of a fall. It wouldn't be that bad, but I don't know.
No,
it's 40 feet.
High pool, it's...
Well, but I was thinking that from the upper, they'd be getting the skin plate up quite high instead of going all the way down.
So and then the hydraulic counts is there'd still be a whole lot of violence going on here because the water would hit here now and then be rolling down here.
And then the minimum opening was pretty small. We did the calc on it, and the minimum opening was close to fish size.
That's right. The adult fish wouldn't be able to pass easily.
Too.
Yeah. Remember, we have kelts at Foster
that
we have to worry about. Yeah. So we did consider that one. That was one of, because they're like, this would be an easy fix.
Yeah.
Just lower it again.
Right.
Until we start, it would be pretty violent here, and then the adult fish, our gate opening.
Your minimum opening is down.
To build a pull up, you'd have I figured that off, a pretty small opening to bottom.
There are also dam safety concerns with water actually hitting, the stream of water hitting the skin plate, where they had experienced that causing damage to the skin plate, actually, and then going underneath the teener gate, vibration issues.
We have small, those teener gates are held very small.
But I'm glad you asked.
There's a minimum
because we
opening. What is that?
So that we can tell the group we considered it, but we didn't even put it up there because we realized right off the bat this isn't going to work. But we, yeah, we spent quite a while brainstorming all kinds of ideas. The eight that we presented were the ones that kind of looked a little
we
bit.
We developed
more.
A little further.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any other ideas? Melissa, do you have any ideas that we can do?
Yeah. I
you like Obermeyer?
I do.
That's the one, that's why we put that as our last one, because this is the one that looks really promising. Again, we're still waiting on hydraulic caps to know how far down this gate has to be costing from Obermeyer. But Jonathan's been talking to them regularly, and it sounds promising. Five or so gates across, and their O&M is almost minimal.
Yeah, that's great. Right. Yeah. As much as I can advocate. For a project,
really folks on the phone, any questions, thoughts, comments?
No questions here.
Sorry, I don't have a question about the Weir new design, but I do have just a couple of questions about the current Weir. So can you just refresh my mind on what the current injury mortality rate is with the Weir as it's functioning now, and then what it would be through the turbines and that kind of thing? Because my understanding is we're using the Weir as it is right now because it's still the best passage option.
No. So I don't have, I'm hesitant to get into data right now, at least because you know, our injuries that we saw are preliminary. Your researchers are going to be presenting this data next week, and I know they're working on it right now. So I'm hesitant on calling out numbers. But with the fact that the Weir is indeed causing injuries, we worked with the RM&E team that we decided it's not safe to operate the Weir for the interim fish passage. So we're actually developed working with the RM&E team and BPA. A special spill ops where we're actually using spillway 3 and we're spilling and looking at the RM&E data from the last many years that we collected, 98%, 96 to 98% of the fish pass at night. And so we worked out a deal with BPA where we would operate the spillway at night from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. With just minimal power generation, only enough for station service for the plant itself to have the lights on. And then during the day, we would close the spillway and operate the turbines at full turbine generation. So that's what we're doing for the special operation fish passage until we fix the Weir.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, so Elise, actually, this is good for you because you might have questions. Somebody might say, why are they spilling at night and operating the turbines? And the operators know to dial in to make sure the ramp rates are not violated, so they know when, you know, how to balance when they do the changeover at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. with spill on turbines. They know how to balance it, so there are no ramp rates downstream are exceeded. But if somebody calls you and say, what's going on at Foster, you can explain that it's a special operations for fish passage.
So we're doing that now?
Yeah.
We started on March 1.
March 1.
I'm sorry, we forgot to, your RM&E friends forgot to tell you, Elise. I'm sorry.
Yeah. but that was a good news to share because we were able to push that special operations through. It took some work, but we got that through. So Bay 3 is being operated right now, the one over here.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah. All right, well, it's 11 o'clock. Any other questions or thoughts and comments for Foster downstream passage and the Weir improvements?
When's going to be our next, I guess, update, or what will we see next?
We will update at the April meeting. We'll either the team or I will update on what progress we made, and if we're getting close to another one of these presentations on the final one, that's what we'll do, or May. And then you'll get our report, which again will have all these descriptions, and then whatever alternatives we go forward with, we'll have more meat and potatoes.
I was going to segue into, are we going to have something to test by 2021?
Don't know yet. We don't want to make any promises. That's no, by 2021.
No promises.
Sorry.
Because we're rearing
I know why. Yeah. I thought you said 2020.
We're going as fast as we can.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're hoping.
Just so you guys know, we are rearing. We're giving special permission to rear steelhead juveniles to test the fix.
Yeah, 2021.
2021, they'll be ready, and that's what they're specifically designated for. And we.
Yes. 2021. Well,
we've got quite a ways to get permission to get them. So.
Jonathan, no pressure, but.
I thought you said 2020 next spring. Yeah. Okay. So we better have something fixed by 2021. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna move segue into the. Oh, before I wrap up, please do, if you go home at night and you're in bed and you can't sleep and you come up with a really good idea of an alternative that could fix our problem, please send me your ideas. You know, this isn't the end. We just presented 8, and 2 of them look really promising, and 1 of them look really, really promising, which is the Obermeyer. But again, if, you know, tonight you're in bed and can't sleep and you, oh, wow, why hadn't the team thought of this? Send me an email tomorrow. So we are still looking for input as we develop these ideas, and we will give you an update at the every month at the Harmony meeting, and when we have something substantial to present, we'll bring it to present. Do folks need a 2-minute break for the bathroom or so before we roll into the Foster ladder update? Go grab a cookie or use the bathroom.
Yes.
All right, let's take 5. Get up and stretch.
Some of us jumped the gun.
Yes. Folks, well, on the you phone, you can go get your own cookie.
Aware of the issue, so.
What's that?
You helped him be aware of the issue.
Yeah. I forgot to share the good news about this.
Yeah.
I was really excited to be able to get that through.
That's typical you. You're just plunging ahead into the next
round. You understand what I was
no time to
whispering to you about, like, is there a way we could
yeah, no, I mean,
like, a little secondary function?
Like a standard product.
Is there a way we could...